Cale Clark here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Relevant Radio and get a free phone. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com.
Fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome to the show. A fabulous Friday to you. We're going to kick off your weekend in style, coming at you live, interactive, and in the moment here on Relevant Radio. It's Cale Clark Show. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. Toll free to talk to me. Do it. 888-914-9149. You can also email the show. Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com is the address. And you can find me on Twitter at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E, and the show account is at Cale Clark Show. And I'm now back in the T-Dot. I am back in, on the north side, I guess you could say. I'm back in Toronto. I was in Chicago, as you know, for some live shows down there this week. We had an incredible assortment of guests come through the studio. It was really a lot of fun. And I started off last Friday with guest hosting Drew Mariani's show, of course, which comes on just before the show here on Relevant Radio. And last Friday, I guest hosted Drew's show while he was in the Holy Land. And we had an incredible time. I would encourage you to check the archives at relevantradio.com or on the app and listen to the interviews that I had with Dr. Craig Evans on the Bible. Biblical illiteracy is an all-time high. What it says, what it means, we need to know this. That was a really great hour that we had there. And Father Patrick Mary Briscoe, a great friend of the show, also joined me to talk about Vatican II. And I might have him back on this show later as well. I hope he's listening. And I might be calling you, Father Patrick, because you might have heard this. Pope Benedict dropped a letter today. That's right. Our Pope Emeritus, Pope Benedict, dropped a letter that he wrote to the president of the Franciscan University of Steubenville. It's a three-page letter, and it's all about Vatican II. And he's got some interesting insights. He was there. He knows what he's talking about. Pope Benedict was there. And there was a conference at the Franciscan University of Steubenville centered on the work of Joseph Ratzinger slash Pope Benedict XVI. And as you know, should we just call him Slash as a nickname, like Cordell Stewart? No, he deserves the dignity because he's earned it, and he's just incredible. And this is a mark of his humility. When he wrote his series on Jesus of Nazareth, he didn't write it as Pope Benedict XVI. He wrote it as Joseph Ratzinger because he says this represented his personal search for the face of the Lord, that Jesus of Nazareth series, which is really great. And it's been celebrated by Catholics, Protestants, Orthodox Christians, people on all sides of the fence when it comes to Christianity. And he's so well known and well respected as a scholar, as well as, of course, his work as Pope, as the pastor of the Universal Church. At any rate, we'll deal with that next week. We'll let that kind of marinate. I want to read that over the weekend and think about it a little bit. But we also had Doug Hinderer on talking about conflict in marriage. That was so much fun. Oh, what a great interview that was. And then I was in studio, of course, for the Cale Clark Show earlier this week in Chicago. We had Preston Alex on for a Money Monday segment, Family Finances. That was really good. People really enjoyed that. Preston, if you're listening, I got a lot of great emails. People really appreciated what you had to say. So if you missed that episode, do check the archives for sure. And then the very next day, we had Tim Fox from Relevant Radio also. We have so much talent at Relevant Radio. It's unbelievable. All these guys behind the scenes, they could have their own shows easily. Tim Fox talking about the fact that October is Mental Health Awareness Month. Really powerful segment there. So check that. And then the great scholar, the great theologian, Matthew Levering, Dr. Matthew Levering, joined me in studio. One of the most prolific authors of our time. I don't know how he does it. Well, he kind of told us how he does it. He cranks out so many books. So all these great episodes, you can kind of binge listen to them on the Relevant Radio app or on the website, relevantradio.com, or wherever you get your podcasts. But I want to start off today. This is a wild story that I came across about a guy that I'd never heard of, and I would bet my bottom dollar you've never heard of this guy as well. He just passed away. He was almost 99 years old. He just about made it to 99. He didn't quite get there. That's okay. I'm sure he's not worried about that now. He's in the Lord's hands, and let's pray for his repose. His name was, well, this is part of the mystery. Was this really his name? We'll get into this, what it's all about. Father Kurt Peter Gumpel, S.J. He was a member of the Jesuits. He was probably more well known as Father Peter. He liked to go by simply Peter. He just said to people, call me Peter, don't even call me Father. At any rate, whether he should have or not is another story, and I know you guys have opinions on that. But who is this guy? Well, first of all, who he was professionally, publicly, I guarantee you you've never heard of this guy, but he was absolutely crucial in the church over the last 50 years. He was at Vatican II as well, by the way. But his secret identity, which only a handful of people on planet Earth knew, his secret identity is even more unbelievable. So let's talk about his public identity. Now, there's a story that came out in America Magazine, and don't message me. I know America Magazine can be a little bit on the left-leaning side of the spectrum, maybe a lot on the left-leaning side of the spectrum. I know that. That's not the point of why I'm bringing this up. I just happened to get a link to a great article that was in the magazine that was written about this guy. The facts are there. I'm not trying to be an apologist for America Magazine or anything like that. I just wanted to get that out of the way. But this article was written by Kenneth L. Woodward. Now that's a name that you probably have heard before, because he used to be the former religion editor at Newsweek magazine, Kenneth L. Woodward. Right now, he is a writer in residence at the University of Chicago. But he wrote this piece, sort of an obituary, sort of a retrospective of the life of this guy, Father Peter Gumpel, S.J. Now, let me tell you about his public-facing persona. And I guarantee you've never heard of this guy. He worked his entire career at the Congregation for the Causes of the Saints in Rome. It's a Vatican department. It's all about trying to figure out whether somebody meets the criterion to become a saint, to be able to be canonized in the Catholic Church or beatified. Of course, that's step number one. And then step number two is canonization, the second verified miracle that has to happen. This is how great he was in that position, at that job. Kenneth L. Woodward says this, and I quote, "His mastery of the history, development, and procedures of canonization was acknowledged as unmatched." Okay, so nobody knew more about the process of canonization, how you become a saint in the Catholic Church, than this guy. So this is what Woodward says. "His mastery of the history, development, and procedures of canonization was acknowledged as unmatched. Together with his longtime friend and colleague, Paul Molinari, S.J., the Jesuits' postulator general, Father Peter Gumpel shepherded more than 150 candidates through the sometimes Byzantine process by which the Roman Catholic Church investigates, studies, and judges those found worthy or unworthy of veneration as saints," end of quote. So he kind of had a partner in crime. They're like Batman and Robin. There was Paul Molinari, also another Jesuit, and he worked with Father Peter Gumpel. And I'll explain their relationship in just a minute. One of them was sort of a more public-facing persona. The other guy was much more private, and that was Father Peter, as you might imagine. So more than 150 candidates he worked on their causes of canonization. Now, some of the big name saints, he worked on their files, some superstar saint files. I guess you could call them the S files, the saint files, as opposed to the X files with David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson. Anyway, I had a girlfriend who was like obsessed with the X files. I never watched it, but at any rate. So the S files, what saint files did he work on? Father Peter worked on the causes of Jacinta and Francisco Marto. And you know them, of course. They are two of the three shepherd children of Fatima, along with Sister Lucia, who saw the Virgin Mary in 1917 in Portugal, and all the miracles that surrounded that whole thing. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show, 888-914-9149. is the number to call, 888-914-9149. He also worked on, Father Peter also worked on, the causes of the 40 martyrs of England and Wales, and also some American women. American woman, you gotta make you a saint. Is that the words? No, I don't think so. Anyways, the guess who? maybe you can find that as a rejoin, Jim. Anyways, he did work on the causes of some American women saints, such as St. Catherine Drexel, St. Philippine Duchesne, and St. Kateri Tekakwitha. And St. Kateri, of course, is the first Native North American saint. Now, in the United States, people think she's the first Native American saint. And in Canada, they think she's the first Native Canadian saint because in her lifetime, she, at various times, lived in what is now around the area of Montreal, Quebec, Canada. And she also lived in what is now New York State. So she kind of moved around a little bit. She's known as the Lily of the Mohawks. But let's just call her the first North American Native saint. All right. So these are some pretty, pretty big names that Father Peter Gumpel, he worked on their causes of canonization. And he was behind it all. And apparently he was the best. He was absolutely the best in the department. However, he is most famous, maybe, for his defense of another person whose cause of canonization is still under investigation. People are still looking at it, but he was in favor of this man being called a saint. I'm talking about Pope Pius XII. Pope Pius XII. It's still a controversial case to this day. The case of the wartime pope, and I'm talking about World War II, Pope Pius XII, is he a canonizable saint? Now, Father Peter Gumpel said yes. He was definitely a guy who was in his corner. However, that is still to be shaken out. That is still to be shaken down. Now, Pope Pius XII, the controversy around him is centered on, did he do enough to stand up to Hitler and his incredibly brutal, evil regime? And you might have heard of the book that came out in 1999 that was written by John Cornwell called Hitler's Pope. And various detractors have called him Hitler's Pope. As Kenneth Woodward calls it, he says this book is a, quote, how does he describe it here? A scandalously titled potboiler, Hitler's Pope. Now, there was I've forgotten who wrote this book, but there was a rejoinder to that book that came out called The Myth of Hitler's Pope. If memory serves, it was published by Ignatius Press. Maybe producer Jim or Patrick, our crack researcher, can look that up, who wrote that book. But a lot of people have tried to debunk this notion that he didn't do enough to try to stop Hitler or speak out against him, or he didn't do enough to save Jews during the Holocaust. In fact, and I've talked about this before on the show, someone who speaks for Pope Pius XII on this front is Roy Schoeman. Now, Roy Schoeman is a convert to Catholicism from Judaism. I trained under some very famous rabbis, went to Harvard, went to MIT, and he's written a couple of books. One of them is called Salvation is from the Jews. It's all about a history, the role of the Jews, all the way from Father Abraham to the second coming of Jesus Christ. And by the way, salvation is from the Jews is a quote from Jesus himself, from John chapter 4, his conversation with the woman at the well, the famous woman at the well. But he also wrote another book. That's an intriguing book. He talks about this in his book. He also talks about a particular individual named Israel Zali in Roy Schoeman's book, Honey from the Rock, which is a collection of 16 conversion stories, Jews who became Catholic. And so, by the way, the guy who wrote The Myth of Hitler's Pope was David G. Dallin, D-A-L-I-N. And thank you very much for that, Jim. Appreciate that. Patrick, he beat you to the punch. How about that? So David G. Dallin, you can read that, called The Myth of Hitler's Pope. Anyways, Roy Schoeman, in both of his books, Salvation is from the Jews and Honey from the Rock, he profiles Israel Zali, who was the chief rabbi of Rome. Okay, now he converted to Catholicism after World War II, and when he did, now he didn't do it just because of him, but Pope Pius XII influenced him so deeply that when he became Catholic, Rabbi Israel Zolli actually took the baptismal name Eugenio, because that was Pope Pius XII's given name before he became Pope. So he was so impressed with what he did to try to save Jews during the Holocaust that he actually took his own baptismal name as his own. So he's definitely somebody who was in Pope Pius XII's corner as well. So I just mentioned all this to say that Father Gumpel was really involved in his cause of canonization. In fact, Father Gumpel had access to all of Pope Pius XII's private letters and papers. And he actually had access to them for decades before any other scholars could get a hold of them. So he really knows this stuff inside and out. And as I kind of agree with this, Kenneth Woodward says that they're located right now in the Vatican's secret archives. That's probably a bad name. It kind of sounds like the church is trying to hide something, the secret archives. Well, maybe call it something else. I don't know, the filing room. But at any rate, that's where they are. And he was the official who was in charge of Father Peter, who passed away just a few days ago, was in charge of the cause of canonization of Pius XII. But the Vatican decided not too long ago to hit the pause button on Pius XII's cause for canonization. Well, they're going to let historians sort this out even more. And, you know, we'll see what happens. But as Woodward says, the whole point of canonizing anyone, he says, is to provide the faithful with timely examples of exceptional Christian holiness worthy of imitation. We can only try to be saints in our own time, in our own situation, with the world that providentially we've been thrown into. That's what we have to do. The epitaph of King David in the Old Testament is very apropos in this regard. It basically gives his epitaph in the Old Testament saying that when he fulfilled God's purpose for him in his generation, he died. Okay, that was it. He did his job. He did it well. He did what God wanted him to do, fulfilled God's purpose for him. So Father Peter Gumpel, that was his public persona. Now, you probably have never even heard of that. That's pretty impressive as it is. In fact, he was called, quote, the most brilliant Jesuit in Rome, end of quote. He spoke 7 languages. He read 6 more languages. That's incredible. Super smart guy, but he was apparently very gracious, very gentlemanly with people that he disagreed with. But he was the man at the Congregation for the Causes of the Saints. But that was not the most interesting thing about him. He had a secret. His secret identity is really wild, and I'll tell you what that was after this short break. How's that for a cliffhanger? You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 888-914-9149. We'll be right back with that. Hi, this is Cale Clark. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. They're a pro-life phone company, and 5% of your monthly plan price goes to Relevant Radio or another pro-life charity of your choice. For a limited time, new customers who mention offer code Relevant Radio get a free phone with free activation and free shipping. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com. This hour is sponsored by Ave Maria Mutual Funds, where financial goals are aligned with pro-life values. And fund decisions are based on investment fundamentals designed to preserve and grow wealth without violating moral beliefs. More information at AveMariaFunds.com. Yes, that's one of producer Jen's favorite TV programs of all time, My Secret Identity. So a good choice, Jim, because we're talking about the secret identity of a Jesuit who just passed away in Rome. He was almost 99 years old, Father Peter Gumpel. He worked at the Congregation for the Causes of the Saints. He was the best at what he did, but that wasn't his secret identity. He was involved in canonizing some pretty famous saints, such as the Children of Fatima, Saints Jacinta and Francisco Marto, The 40 Martyrs of England and Wales, some American saints, St. Catherine Drexel, for example, St. Kateri Tekakwitha. He was working on, up until the time of his death, the cause of canonization of Pope Pius XII. He was a big advocate for him as a saint. But that wasn't his secret identity. That was his public identity, and that was pretty impressive. But what was his secret identity? I'm about to tell you, but first I'm going to give out the phone number once again. 888-914-9149 is the number to call toll-free to talk to me. If you have a question, it's probably going to be about something else. You probably don't know about this story. I didn't know about it until I read about it. You can call in right now, 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. You can also email the show, Kale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com, or find me on Twitter, at Kale Clark. All right, so I'm going to put you out of your misery. What is the secret? Well, Kenneth Woodward, who wrote this article about him in America Magazine, he shared the secret with him. Father Peter shared the secret with him, and only a few other people knew it. Father Arupe, who used to be the head of the Jesuits, he knew it. Father Molinari, who worked with him, they were kind of a team like Batman and Robin at the Congregation of Causes of the Saints. Molinari was kind of a world traveler. He would hang out at all the restaurants in Rome. Father Peter would just chain smoke in his office and have these floor-to-ceiling papers and books just stacked everywhere. In fact, Kenneth Woodward said he invited him out for dinner one time in Rome. He paid for it. Father Peter paid for it. And he didn't eat a thing. He just smoked cigarettes. So he was just the guy who was behind the scenes. And maybe part of why he was behind the scenes was because of his secret identity. Did I mention he has a secret identity? All right. You're like, Kale, just tell me what it is. Okay. All right. Here's what it was. So his last name was a pseudonym, Father Peter Gumpel. That was not his real name. What was his real family name? What was the family he was born into? It was the, now I know I'm going to butcher the pronunciation of this, but Hohenzollern. I already messed it up, didn't I, Jim? Jim has a German background, so he should come on and just say this properly. But
Hohenzollern.
There you go. That's it. Hohenzollern. Okay. So
you have to sound a little bit mad when you're saying that.
I love it. Well, what's the big deal about that name? Say it again, Jim.
Hohenzollern.
Yeah. Get mad. All right. So that family name was the family name of a royal dynasty, kings and emperors, all the way up until the last German emperor in the year 1918. Started in the 11th century, this royal family. And there were still people out there living today who are descendants of this royal family. And guess what? Father Peter Gumpel was a descendant of the dynasty of emperors of Germany. In fact, he may even lay claim to the title of the Emperor of Germany. Isn't that wild? The guy who worked so hard on the canonization of Pope Pius XII, who was mocked by some as Hitler's Pope, far from the case. He did probably as much or more to save Jews during the Holocaust as anyone, totally slandered by that. Can you imagine? The guy working on his canonization case is actually a descendant of the German royal family, the Emperor of Germany. Wow. So that is absolutely unbelievable. And he told, only a few people knew this, only about three or four people in the world knew this, but he did share this with the former religion editor of Newsweek, Kenneth L. Woodward, over a meal one day. So, and he has no idea why he told him this, but another person who knew was the Pope at the time, and I'm talking about Pope Paul VI, who was the Pope who closed off the Second Vatican Council. And in fact, during Vatican II, this is a good story that Woodward tells in his article. We'll put a link to it in the show notes. But Pope Paul VI knew what his real identity was. And he actually asked Father Peter at Vatican II, because he was kind of there working at Vatican II as a consultant. The Pope said, hey, can you write down your life story, please? I think people need to know this. And Father Peter said, well, Holy Father, if you ask me, I've got to do it. I have to be obedient. I have to do it. But I only have one request. And the Pope's like, okay, what's that? if I write my life story for you, as soon as I give it to you, you have to promise that you'll destroy it. Okay. So I guess the Pope's like, well, maybe you don't have to do it after all. So it is an incredible story. And what was that story? Well, Father Peter, who is actually part of the Hohenzollern. Say it again, Jim.
Hohenzollern.
There you go. Well, that was his actual last name. And he was expected. He was an only son. He was expected to extend the royal line. But as he was growing up, he wanted to become a Jesuit. So his heart was torn. His family wants him to continue the royal line. He wants to be a Jesuit priest. So he didn't know what to do. So he went to a friend of the family. And this particular friend of the family, when he was young, he was an Italian priest. And he'd become a very, very good friend of their family. And, you know, and this priest told him, hey, just follow your heart. Follow your heart. You know who the priest was who told him that? It was the future Pope Pius XII. How about that? Can you imagine? Who at the time was a cardinal. It was Cardinal Eugenio Pacelli. He was the Vatican ambassador to Germany at the time. And he would soon be elected as Pope Pius XII. Isn't that wild? And then he works on his cause of canonization in the future. That's an incredible story. It's an incredible story. So he changed his name. I won't even try to pronounce his original last name anymore. He changed his name to Father Gumpel because of the fact that the Nazis were in power and they were watching. That's all he said. The Nazis were in power. They were watching. And he probably changed his name to protect his relatives. They probably would have been under persecution if the Nazis had known that one of his family members in this royal line of Germany was actually a Jesuit priest. At any rate, apparently his family did suffer. He gave a number of interviews that suggested that his family did suffer at some level under the Nazi regime. And there's also a Dutch newspaper has been looking into his identity as well. And one of the things that this newspaper, this Dutch daily, dug up was that he might have been the illegitimate grandson of a wealthy and politically powerful Hanover industrialist who once owned a private bank called the Gumpel Bank. So how about that? And then this guy apparently lost his fortune. So very, very, very strange. So the mystery kind of gets deeper. And so that's another reason why he changed his name. He said, my name is completely changed. If I say my grandfather's name, who he was, my name will also be known. So Woodward says he's got to be a Hohenzollern. I know I messed that up again. Sorry, everybody. But I don't know what's going on here. But Jim, say it again. You can do it better than me.
Hohenzollern. I can't say it good either.
I don't know, man. That was convincing.
You need to have a bowl of sauerkraut before you go out there. it brings out the German in you.
Well, I'll tell you. Well, you had me over when I was in Chicago. You had me over for some great German food. There was home cooked, some schnitzel, some sauerkraut. It was incredible. All kinds of other things. Brats.
Fun times.
Good German beer. It was good times.
It was a blessing to have you, man.
Well, thank you, man. It was great to spend time with you and your beautiful family. But at any rate, so that's the story. That's the story of Father Peter Gumpel, S.J., and he has now been laid to rest. And I'm just going to quote Woodward here because he says it so well. He says, quote, it was also fitting that Kurt Peter Gumpel, S.J., was laid to rest in the German cemetery inside the Vatican's walls, rather than in a vault inside his family castle. The church was his family, the Jesuits his companions, the saints his only royalty. I love it. He worked for the canonization of so many saints. The saints were his true royalty in the family of God. But what an amazing story. What an amazing story. All right, well, let's go to the phones right now. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Bob in Shorewood, Minnesota. Hi, Bob.
Hi there. I was wondering if Father Gumpel might have investigated the case of a priest that I prayed to for the deliverance of my son from inoperable brain cancer. This was back, I think I think the priest died in the early part of this century, just a couple 3 months after he was ordained, because he was ordained with terminal cancer. And my sister told me to ask for his intercession. And I didn't know the priest, but I do happen to know his dad because his dad's worked with me in prison ministry. But he was diagnosed, you know, in December 2012, and the tumor was already twice the size of a golf ball. And
this is your son's tumor.
To be inoperable, yeah. And, yeah, that's my son's brain tumor, right. And, but, and so I got on the phone with the late Father Darren Didier's dad, and we were weeping on the phone together, basically, and I asked if I should seek his son's intercession, and he told me it would be as painful as it was to lose my son at such an early age, it would be tough to ask God for him back in light of all the miracles that have happened as a result of his intercession.
Wow. No, I have not heard of this priest, but is his cause for canonization open?
That I don't know. I haven't heard whether it is or not. All I know is that I prayed, I prayed to him a lot, but the one time I vocally prayed for my son, when my son was there to him, I got kind of an immediate sign, and a year later, he was tumor-free without surgery.
And what was Father Darren's last name?
Didier.
Didier, okay.
D-I-E-R, yeah.
Okay. Wow, no, I haven't heard of this, but I think it's quite beautiful how his father, Father Darren's father, prayed with you. He had lost his son, and you were thinking you were going to lose yours, and that's amazing. And so I thank you for sharing that story. I know I haven't heard of Father Darren, and I have no idea whether his cause for canonization is open at the local level or whether it's made its way to Rome. I don't know, but that's a wonderful story. I'm so happy that your son has been healed. And so this is something that people need to be looking into, church authorities, if they're not already. I suspect that they may be, especially if things like this have happened on the regular, through people asking for Father Darren's intercession. Well, Bob, thank you for sharing that. God bless you and enjoy your weekend. That is, thank you for calling in. Now, I haven't heard of that, but that is intriguing to say the least. And I think there are a lot of saints among us. That's what we need to realize. And the fact that the person in the mirror, you, are also called to be a saint, a canonizable saint, that one day people can ask for your intercession, that's the goal. And don't sell yourself short. Don't think that you can't do that. You can't do it, that's for sure, but God can do it in and through you. And that's really what the message of Vatican II was all about, that the universal call to holiness, I would say, is probably the key message of Vatican II, that we are all called to be saints, and we can do it with God helping us. And of course, God is by far the major partner in this deal. All right, let's go now to Paul in Youngstown. Hey, welcome back, Paul.
Hi, Cale. I just wondered, during your time in Chicago, if you made it to that small little town an hour outside of Chicago, it has a shrine, St. John's, Indiana.
Now, is this the Shrine of Christ's Passion?
It must be. I heard it on the last commercial break. They were promoting.
That's probably it.
I thought, well, if you wanted to be near the studio and you lived in St. John, Indiana, you would have the comfort of a stress-free small-town life with an easy commute to the big city.
Well, it's not too far away. I'll say that. And in fact, I did go there during my time in Chicago, and I actually went down there with Father Rocky, the CEO of Relevant Radio. We actually drove down to the Shrine of Christ's Passion in Indiana, and we met Frank, who runs the shrine, and just does an incredible, I mean, it's amazing what he has built in a very short period of time, and we saw a beautiful, this, it's, I can honestly say this is the most beautiful representation I've ever seen. A beautiful bronze statue of Our Lady of Guadalupe and Juan Diego at the Shrine of Christ's Passion. It's just gorgeous. And Father Rocky, actually, you press a little button there and there's an explanation in English and in Spanish. And the English explanation is from Father Rocky. And I believe the Spanish explanation is also from someone who works at Relevant Radio, Diana, I believe. But I'm not 100% sure of that, but we'll double check that. But it's great. It's an amazing, amazing place. And it's only going to be expanding more. There's an incredible gift shop there. And they really do support the work of Relevant Radio. We hope to have the Family Rosary Across America live from the shrine real soon. So more info on that. Stay tuned. So yes, Paul, I have been there. It's a really cool place. I also went to another shrine. I spent the weekend while I was there. I was over there over a weekend, and on Sunday I went to the shrine of Father Rocky of Christ's Passion, and then on Saturday I went to Marytown, the National Shrine of Saint Maximilian Kolbe. That was incredibly impressive as well. I was very moved by being there. Something else. I had a spiritual experience there, but nothing crazy. I didn't have locutions or anything like that, but I was very touched by that place as well. Pardon me, but I'm not crying. But no, it was really quite beautiful. And so my thanks to producer Jim for encouraging me to get down there too. It was a lot of fun. All right. Well, listen, more of your calls are coming up. If you want to call in, 888-914-9149. It is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. When we come back, not only will we have your phone calls, but also I'll be sharing with you how to make better decisions. And we all need it. We all make decisions all the time. Some of them are more important than others, but we need to make them better. I'm going to give you a little framework for how you can do that, which I found right after this. 888-914-9149. We'll be right back. The Catholic Order of Foresters, the sponsor of our studio's line, is hiring today. Several positions are available throughout the United States. Visit relevantradio.com/forester to learn more about how you can find your vocation with Catholic Order of Foresters, an Illinois Life Insurance Society, not licensed in all states.
Explaining the faith so you can explain it to others. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Hey, welcome back to the program. Final segment of the week coming up. It's going to be fun. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. 888-914-9149. Email address is Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com. Great place to send show ideas. Love to get them from you. I want to talk about what you want to hear about. And then, of course, you can follow me on Twitter at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. Let's go to the phones right now. Ryan is calling from beautiful San Diego. Hey, Ryan.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
My question is, will the Antichrist be an exception to the commandment to love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you?
Oh, wow, what a question. That's an interesting question, Ryan. Ryan in San Diego. When the Antichrist arrives as a historical personage, are we supposed to pray for this person? You know, and that's, the church does teach that there will be some sort of an actual, this is not simply a metaphor, at the end of time, the catechism talks about this. But I would say this. I mean, this could be something along the lines of somebody like Judas, right? Where he was destined for perdition, you know, a son of perdition, if you will. That's what John's gospel seems to suggest. Intriguing. I want to point out something else though about that people often forget about when speaking of the Antichrist, quote unquote. And there's always been speculation about who the Antichrist is going to be at the end of time. Hitler, that's a great choice, right? I mean, one would think, he's persecuting the people of God. He's persecuting the Jews. He's persecuting Christians. He's persecuting all kinds of people. This guy, if there was ever anybody who fits the profile, it seems like it's this guy, but he wasn't the Antichrist at the end of time. He was an Antichrist, that's for sure. And there have been plenty of those throughout human history. What I want you to know too, Ryan, is I want you to think about where the Bible actually talks about the Antichrist. Now, it's actually not in the book of Revelation. Now, the book of Revelation does talk about the end of time, and that can be taken on a few different levels. We did a series on Revelation on the Faith Explained program. It's one of our most popular series. People are so intrigued by the book of Revelation. Now, it's not that the term is not actually in there. You know where it actually does show up, though? Now, I think it's the same person who wrote both the book of Revelation and these letters. I'm talking about John, the apostle, who I think also wrote the Gospel of John. The letters of John, they do talk about Antichrist. And it actually says, John actually says that many Antichrists have come. Many Antichrists have come. Now, and what was their sort of defining characteristic? They were basically members of the church who denied the incarnation. They denied that Jesus was fully man, that he was fully God, but also fully man. They denied the full incarnation, the full humanity, full divinity. They thought that Jesus simply seemed to be human, like a phantasm of sorts. You know how they have now projections at concerts of like entertainers who passed on, like a hologram of Michael Jackson or something? That's probably what they thought was going on, something like that. And so John is very, very clear that an Antichrist is anybody who denies the incarnation, the full humanity of Christ. So there is plenty of people like that around. Anybody who's sort of against Christ is at some level an Antichrist. So we need to pray for those people. And John really, when in his day, in the first century, these people have left the church. We need to pray for them that they come back. We need to pray for our sisters and brothers in the Catholic community who have walked away from the church. They have rejected the teaching of Jesus Christ. In that sense, they have become a type of Antichrist. And whether it's because they don't understand it well, or maybe it wasn't explained properly to them, and they're people of goodwill who just say, I can't buy this because I don't get it. Nobody's ever explained this to me. That's one thing. But there are also people who are actively against Christ, and we need to pray for them as well. As Jesus said, and you rightly pointed that out, we do have to pray for our enemies. We do have to love one another. That's the defining mark of a Christian. Not only love for the brethren, love for our brothers and sisters in the church, but also love for everyone, even our enemies, as Jesus himself practiced. So that's really important to remember. We have to, you know, instead of speculating about who this figure might be, looking at headlines, trying to parse them, we're probably much better off looking at our own immediate situation in our own local parish and asking ourselves, are we loving each other the way that we should be? Because that is the true mark of Christianity. That is the anti-Antichrist. That is the pro-Christ position for sure. So thanks for that question, Ryan. And I hope you have a very, very good weekend. It's a really good one. I promised you guys that I would share with you a little bit on how to make better decisions. And I know I tweeted out that we talk about what's the best ginger ale. The answer is Canada Dry. We don't even have to do this. But I'll deal with this on Monday because there's a bit more of a story to this than you might think. But I do want to talk to you guys about how to make better decisions. And I found an interesting thread on Twitter about this, and Twitter is very famous now for these threads, these tweets that kind of attach to one another, and they become little essays. There's a guy on Twitter by the name of Alex Brogan, who shares what he's learning, how to get better at the game of life, he calls. He puts out a lot of mental models, @_AlexBrogan, and he basically said this, and I'm going to quote him here. This is not me saying this. This is Alex Brogan saying. He says, quote, "Most people suck at decision-making. Let's change that." So here are 15 of the best decision-making mental models that I have found. Hey, sounds promising. We all need to make better decisions. We are faced with all kinds of decisions, some important, some not so important. We want to make better decisions in any case. So here's the top 15. So he gives these little tiny explanations of each one, and they're intriguing. They're really mentally stimulating. They're mental models, I guess. So anyway, so the first one, he calls it the inside-outside view. What's the inside-outside view? He says we have a natural tendency to favor the inside view. which is our own independent solution to a problem that incorporates all of our hidden biases. That's a problem with only making decisions on what you're working with, your own thoughts, your own take on the situation, because you're biased. We all are. We all have hidden biases. He says to make better decisions, we should favor the outside view. And the outside view is one that incorporates the best available data. The best available data. And hey, Tim Fox, who was on the show the other day, he does big data for us at Relevant Radio. So we try to make decisions based on actual facts, actual data. So if you can get the outside data, that's crucial, because often the data will not correspond with what you think. It's possible that you're wrong. So number two is called the ladder of inference. This is intriguing. And there's kind of a visual. He's got a bit of a diagram of this. And just imagine a ladder in your mind. And the ladder of inference is all about the decision-making process we go through to get from a fact to a decision, from a fact to an action. So we need to, he basically says, we need to climb the ladder more slowly. And oftentimes this happens without our thinking about it. But it, just picture a ladder in your mind. On the bottom rung, he has available data. So that's observable reality. That's what we can see around us. The next rung up is called selected data. What did I ignore? What didn't I pay attention to? Are there other sources of data I did not consider? The next rung up is called interpretations. So that's when we try to make sense of the data. Am I looking at the data objectively? What other meanings could they have? The next rung on the ladder is assumptions. Not biblical assumptions, but are my assumptions valid? Why am I assuming this? Conclusions is the next one. Why did I conclude this? What are my assumptions there? The next rung up is beliefs. What belief do I hold about this? What conclusions are they based on? And the last one is actions. And you have to ask yourself the question at the top of the ladder, why do I believe this to be the right action? What are some alternative options? All right, so I'll send out a link to these tweets, by the way, if you want to look these up later. So that's the next one. Then he says, here's another decision-making model. Confidence determines speed versus quality. And there's kind of a horizontal line. This is kind of a diagram where there's kind of a continuum where there's high confidence in the problem and high confidence in the solution. You have to make a quality decision. If it's a big problem, you have to get the right answer. You need to have a quality decision. If something's not so important, like what kind of drink you want with your meal, well, then you can do that pretty quickly. You can make your decision based on speed. So he says the more confidence you have in the importance of a problem and your understanding of how to solve it, the more you should focus on quality. But if you need to learn more, he says move fast and break things. The next one is called the devil's advocate position. If you're trying to make decisions, Alex Brogan says this is the antidote to confirmation bias. And remember, the Vatican used to have this, and we talked about the Congregation of the Causes of Saints. They don't have this anymore, but they actually had a position called the devil's advocate, who would sort of make the anti-case. You think somebody's a saint? Well, here's why he's not, or here's why she's not. And depending on how good that case is, the person might not be canonized. So this is the antidote to confirmation bias. It's trying to view a decision from the opposite viewpoint, or actually seeking out people who disagree with you to kind of test your thesis. And Charlie Munger, now most of you guys have heard of Charlie Munger. He works very closely with Warren Buffett. He's his right-hand man. Charlie Munger has all these aphorisms, all these words of wisdom. Charlie Munger said this, quote, "I never allow myself to have an opinion on anything that I don't know the other side's argument better than they do," end of quote. That's an incredible quote. That's an incredible quote. I don't allow myself to have an opinion on anything where I don't know the other side's argument better than they do. Wow, wow. All right, so he gives a few more models. One is called a pre-mortem. You've heard of a post-mortem. My wife hates watching like sports when they break down the game after it's over. The post-mortem sort of desiccation of the game is just like, I hate that stuff. I love that stuff. I love it. But there's also a pre-mortem. And that's an interesting mental model where you assume that the decision you're going to make is going to fail, and you try to work backwards. Why did it fail? Before it even happens. That's wild. Apparently, it's to remove overconfidence and irrational optimism, blind spots. And then, of course, there's the post-mortem when something, you've made a decision, whether it goes badly or it goes really well, you can still learn something from it. So you ask yourself, what went poorly? What went well? What can we improve upon next time we have to make a decision? And that helps us. He talks about decision trees. Not going to get into that. That's more of a visual. I can't really explain that on the radio. Information overload. We know about that, right? Especially in the age of big data, big media. Information overload is when you have way too much information at hand and it causes decisions to take too long. It leads to analysis paralysis. And analysis paralysis, of course, has to do with the paradox of choice. Remember Henry Ford, when he created the Model T, he said they can have it in any color they want as long as it's black. I kind of like having not so many choices because it makes life a lot easier. That's just my personality. Sometimes when we have a lot of options, we can be slowed down in decision-making because the best option isn't so clear. Now, the problem is, though, when you're dithering and not deciding, that is making a choice. Then the choice is just the status quo. In other words, I'm not doing anything. I'm not making a choice for or against. So we're running out of time here, but I'm going to give you a couple more here real quickly. These are really cool. Reversible versus irreversible decisions. Now, Jeff Bezos used this a lot when he was building Amazon. Irreversible decisions are one-way doors. Like, if I do this, there's no going back. So if these irreversible decisions in life, you have to make them slowly, deliberately. You got to be sure you know what you're doing. If it's a reversible decision, you can take it back. If it doesn't work out, no problem. You can start over again. That's a two-way door. A reversible decision that you can easily reverse, you can make that decision really quickly. You don't need to deliberate too much. Real quick, the luck razor. If you have two equal options, pick the one that will produce the most luck down the line. Should I stay in tonight or meet this interesting stranger? Make proud decisions for your 80-year-old self and your 10-year-old self. Your 80-year-old self, you won't regret those decisions when you're older. Your 10-year-old self reminds you to have fun. And I hope you had fun with me today on The Cale Clark Show. We'll see you next week. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.